It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of American Loser. We're here at a shared universe studio down in Eatontown, New Jersey. Ming and Zapsic always taking good care of us. With me, as always, my handsome father, Larry Burke. How are you, sir?
Hey, there we go. How are we doing today? All right?
I think we're going good, man. You and me had fun researching this one, so I think it's going to be good. behind the ones and twos, as always, back in his rightful place, our pal, the Big Kahuna.
How What's you going on, everybody?
There he is.
How everybody doing?
I think we're doing good, boy. We missed you, man. It was
I know.
We got a good one here. I'm so excited to bring this guy in. He's going to be on a couple other episodes too down the road. I've guy's been one of my closest friends since freshman year of high school.
Oh wow.
You might not believe it. He looks good right now. At one time, it is hard to believe, but our guest today is my pal Anthony Cianci. All right. Welcome to the show. Thank you for doing
it,
buddy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Are you an avid listener?
I am an avid listener. It's like having a fanboy on the show right now.
I won't front. When you were in the hallway, you were like, there's a face for Big Kahuna. He's not just some voice.
It was super weird hearing
you. You were like, wait, that's him?
That's not how I pictured him. Yeah.
I did love it, too, for our Facebook Live episode. People did respond wanting to know what the Kahuna looks like, so we've solved that mystery now.
Yes.
hard to believe. At one time, Anthony Cianci and I both wrestled at 171 on the Wayne Valley Wrestling.
Yes.
Team,
so. Wow.
Ant looks like he's wrestling at 140 right now.
Yeah.
I look like I'm a coach.
right.
But I'm really excited, man. We got a shitload to dive into with this one. We're going to talk about probably – I knew he was going to be interesting. I didn't realize how interesting he was going to be. When you talk about some of the worst presidents ranked historically, okay, there's always the weird stuff like the William Henry Harrison because he was only in office for about 90 days total, right? Then you talk about the great presidents, the guys who got their faces on money and shit, you know what I mean? And then you got these little weird characters that kind of all fall in line somewhere in, I guess you'd call them the Gilded Age presidents and then the early 1920s presidents. But we're going to talk today about Warren G. Harding. And what do you know off the top of your head about Warren G. Harding?
What I know about Warren G. Harding? I got nothing. Boardwalk Empire, maybe?
Yeah, excellent.
There
excellent. That's a good grab on that with Cahoon. Do you know anything about Warren G. Harding?
Nothing. Oh, absolutely
dude.
Nothing.
We're going to walk away from this one with some fucking knowledge then. All right? This is good.
And I feel bad because like I just started Boardwalk Empire too. So like
I think season two is as far as me and my wife have gotten. I think he's in season two. So
okay.
you got some ways.
Okay, cool.
They make references to this guy on the show a bunch of times and a couple of the other weird things he was involved with. So this is actually going to enhance the viewing pleasure of Boardwalk Empire for you.
Yes. Have a lot of the best.
This is the companion piece.
It's going to be a good one.
Might have to go for season three.
That's
we got to go talk to HBO for all these plugs we're giving it.
I was going to say, yeah, they're really benefiting off of our listenership. But the question we're going to start with is, well, what makes Warren G. Harding a loser? And is it because most people don't know, as Kahuna has proven, who the fuck he is? Is it because he's from Ohio and a lot of losers are from Ohio? Or is it because he's considered one of the worst presidents of all time? Or finally, is it because the G in Warren G. stands for the worst middle name I've ever heard, Gamaliel? Warren Gamaliel Harding.
Yeah.
Well –
That's a name only a mother could pick.
That's
I'm out.
Oh, I've heard worse, but that is pretty bad.
Yeah, like when your parents named you Kahuna, how did they feel about that?
Well, it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. They were not fans.
Well, weird stuff too is that he does have all these weird things about him, but Warren G. is also a pretty historical guy here. He is the first sitting senator to ever be elected president of the United States. He served as the 29th president of the United States and died in office before he could be reelected. They thought he was a shoo-in to be reelected, so he would have had two terms of Warren G. had he had a chance to run. But timing is everything, as we're going to cover here. So born November 2nd, 1865 in Blooming Grove, Ohio, Do we know anybody else with a birthday of November 2nd, Dad?
My lovely wife is also a November 2nd birthday girl.
Well, she is in good company here. Luckily, she was born in New Jersey.
Ohio. Blooming Grove, Ohio.
Yeah, but 1865, so that you're talking Civil War era in Blooming Grove, Ohio. Young Warren was nicknamed Winnie. That's a shitty nickname, is it not, Aunt?
Yes, I actually have a college buddy we call Winnie the Pooh. His middle name is Winifred. So
it's just because he never had pants on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wore a red shirt.
You unfortunate bastard. I'm so sorry.
Well, so Winnie was the oldest of eight children born to George and Phoebe Harding, okay? And his father had a small medical practice in town, and he was highly respected. Now, Ohio, pretty nice place to be. The time's kind of a weird time because you're up north, you know, because when we talk about this time frame for the Civil War, you're talking mostly about the East Coast and then specifically down south, you know, dealing with the Confederacy and whatnot. But thought this was interesting. It was rumored by enemies of the family, the Harding family, that Warren's great-grandmother was African. Okay, which was that was like an insult to them back then. So this rumor would haunt him his entire political career, and it has persisted until in 2015, Harding's ancestry was tested via DNA testing. He was determined to not have any African heritage. So could you imagine in 2015, mind you, in 2015, if the results had come back that Warren G. Harding and not Obama was actually the first black president? Imagine the news getting to Obama as he's sitting there, you know, in the Oval Office. It's like, oh, by the way, sir, you're now the second African-American to ever become president. We're number two.
Destroy those records.
Oh, man. Nothing would have made me laugh harder. But
did they dig him up in 2015? Or?
No, they tested. That's a good question. They tested his
That's a good question.
Yeah.
His ancestors.
Just have Harding's DNA lying around the White House?
Well, they tested it through his lineage, if you will. So it was the people that are still alive to this day. Because that's another thing, too, that is interesting with America is that we do have, since there is no king and no royal bloodline, there's a lot of people that are descendants of presidents, which is pretty cool.
But sometimes whenever we do talk – on the few occasions we've talked about presidents on this show, sometimes I'll go on Wikipedia and I'll start to like see how far down the family tree goes. Like the last president we talked about, I forgot the name, but he has relatives that are still alive.
A lot of them do, man, which is – it gets even weirder.
That's crazy.
Now if you Google Warren G. Harding, you will look. He does have he looks like Legal Beagle from The Muppets.
Oh, no.
He really does. But he's an interesting guy, man. Harding, as a boy, decided it was time to learn the newspaper business. He learned it by running his father's abolitionist paper. So abolitionist meaning against slavery. His father was a devout abolitionist, didn't believe in it at all, and had this paper called The Argus that Harding would learn the newspaper business from. Harding would start his own college paper. He attended Central Ohio College of Iberia, and he had his own college paper that was pretty well known. And you went to college. Did you ever?
Technically, yeah. Florida. I don't know how much college was getting done.
In between case races and, you know, sitting there riding motorcycles around downtown, chilling in the back of a pickup truck, did you ever think maybe it's time to start your own college newspaper?
No. We used to read the college newspaper for the crossword puzzles, and we'd Google everything.
See, that's not bad then. Well, so now what we're starting to see is that Warren G's got this background in journalism, which is interesting because you want to talk about fake news and the lying media and all that stuff. Well, it's kind of always been that way, which is even funnier. But Harding loved Ohio, specifically Marion, Ohio, where he spent most of his life. He loves Ohio like Springsteen loves Jersey. Okay. Any chance he can get to squeeze it in there, oh, I'm a proud Ohio boy. But he purchased a failing newspaper called the Marion Star, and he used the press status that came with owning a newspaper and the free railroad pass that came with it. So if you owned a paper, you were a member of the free press. So you got access to, you know, sit ringside at a sports event, something like that. But you also got the railroad pass so that you could cover things. So kind of a cool deal with that. He takes that railroad pass and heads down in 1884 to the Republican National Convention. And Warren was a staunch Republican, toted the party line on everything. And he campaigned for James G. Blaine. All right. Now, listeners of the show might remember James G. Blaine as the man who lost to our boy Grover Cleveland, the pride of New Jersey.
Jersey's own Grover Cleveland.
In his first election, because Grover Cleveland served non-consecutive terms, as we covered in the first episode of this show. Warren was so annoyed at having to support Cleveland while he was working at another newspaper that he endeavored to make his paper, the Marion Star, which he would own majority of his life, he made sure that it was a nonpartisan paper. So in Ohio, they were mostly Republicans up there in Ohio. But the Republican Party kind of goes through this weird shift at the time. So the Democrats have their paper. The Republicans have their paper. And now Warren G., so fucking smart, he makes his paper nonpartisan. Like, oh, how about I just give you the news? You do what you want right. with it.
And pretend
what a concept.
And pretend it's a straight story, the unbiased story. At least that's the pretend.
Well, people loved it. They response from the readers, it became the most popular paper in the area. It actually put the Republican newspaper out of business because I don't need rah-rah team stuff. I want to know what's actually happening, you know? So it's fun to listen to Michael Kay call a Yankee game, but sometimes you want to hear from MLB Network what they're actually doing.
Well so, said.
But so he was annoyed by that. And really at the time too, we talk about the free press and everything like that, but these are – when you have a team, you're not a reporter. You're a blogger. You know what I mean? So Harding is still to this day the only U.S. president with a background in journalism. You want to talk about that for the lying media? I am the lying media. So – but all right, now this is where it gets interesting. Ant, you're a married man.
I'm a married man.
Okay. Now, it's always interesting. Did your in-laws, did they like you when you first started coming around?
They did. Actually, I won my mother-in-law over fairly quickly. I actually went to college with my brother-in-law. That's how me and my wife met at graduation. True story, actually, if we want to get into it, I don't want to go too crazy, but I actually slept in her bed before I even knew her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that one's in.
I'll leave you with that. All
right. And now for the rest of the story in a future episode.
This is what weirds me out here is that I threw to Ant because I thought – because I know Ant. I adore his wife and the kids. I love you, buddy. You know that. But I was throwing to you because you would have a sense of normalcy for me to talk about here so that we could talk about how weird Warren G's thing is. I think you out-weirded Warren G.
That's why I'm here.
Well, in Marion, Ohio, the Kling family was very well known. Florence Kling was the prized daughter of the powerful Amos Kling. All right. Now, Amos Kling was kind of he was used to getting his way, I'll put it that way. But he was also a regular target of criticism in Harding's own paper, the Marion Star, as we talked about.
Who is this guy again? Sorry.
Amos Kling. So yeah. I know we're introducing a lot of characters here. So this is the Kling family. And so Amos Kling, he's got a little feud going on with Harding. But his prized daughter, his favorite kid that he was bringing around with him to his business forever, is Florence Kling. Now, Florence gets into an argument with her father, and they have a little beef going on because Florence drops out of music school and elopes with a man named Peter DeWolf, I believe was his name. And she elopes and runs off with him against Amos's wishes, comes back a year or two later alone, no Mr. DeWolf to be found, no husband, but she's got a kid now. So Florence, she was able to work out a deal where her father Amos then provided for the kid but would not provide for her. So she had a little bit of music background and everything from school, so she started teaching piano.
So Amos is taking care of the grandchild but not taking care of his own daughter.
Yes, yeah, okay. Absolutely. And so in order to make ends meet, Florence starts teaching piano, and one of the people she starts teaching piano to is the sister of Warren G. Harding. The owner of the paper who routinely destroys her father. So kind of interesting thing. So that's a weird one too when you start banging your sister's piano teacher. But that's essentially how Warren finds the love of his life, if you will.
But making music together. Hey.
Well, this enraged Amos too, Florence's father, because he actually organized a boycott of Warren's paper because, first of all, this is the guy whose papers routinely destroy me. Now you're going to bang my daughter. And they might be African. All right.
Yeah, so, he was not an abolitionist by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And so they go ahead and they start he organizes this boycott. And Warren G., throughout his entire career, is known as they always comment on what a calm and kind of humble man he was, very calm demeanor. He responded with to one of Amos's threats of the boycott, "Knock it off or tell that man I will beat the tar out of him." So not a guy who – that is the dying ain't much of a living boy from the Outlaw Josie Wales.
That's the throwdown with old Warren G. to the future father-in-law.
Yeah, just letting you know, if you want, we can continue on this path, but I plan to remedy it. So you make a threat like that to your future father-in-law, you'd think that would be a big problem, right? It kind of ended the issue, you know, no more issues that they're having here. Florence and Warren are now wed July 8th, 1981. Jeez. I'm sorry, 1881. Their marriage bore no children, all right? But Florence did have the child with Mr. DeWolf when she eloped. Warren admired Florence because she was a pretty smart lady. She knew her shit, you know what I mean? It's like how you and Mel are a good match, you know what I mean? Because Mel, like, because you know, you'll sit there and you work hard to provide for your family, and then Mel will also tell you that maybe you've had enough bourbon.
Yeah, yeah, not often enough.
It's
Florence is also a pretty strong force on her own right too, because I mean she grew up working with Daddy with Amos in the newspaper mm-hmm. business, so she knew the ins and outs of the newspaper world, and she was no cupcake. She was a hard charger.
Oh, he only gets more fascinating too, because Warren admired her. She was highly involved in his business and his political dealings as they went on. You ever hear of Warren's nickname for her, Dad? Did you pick up on that?
The Duchess, I think, right?
Yep, he referred to not the Wolf of Wall Street kind with God, that little
Margot
blonde.
Robbie.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you see her in that movie and you're like, there's no way she could get any hotter, you know, with the New York accent. And then you find out she's got an Australian accent.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh boy, that changes things. But he referred to her as the Duchess, which was based off of a character in a periodical that was kind of a penny pincher, if you will. You know, a little bit of a hard ass. Maybe watched him like a hawk kind of a thing.
Right.
One of Florence's quotes I thought was good. And I'm sure everybody, every man's wife has said this at one point or other. He does well when he listens to me. And poorly when he does not. So
straighten out, Warren, because I'll tell you how to fly here.
She was definitely a force to be reckoned with.
So did Warren and DeWolf ever see anything down the line?
No, DeWolf kind of disappears out of the story. Okay. Yeah, which I mean that wasn't uncommon for the time either to have a kid and they're like, oh well, I don't have to deal with that. So anyway, you can do what you want here, and I'm going to go to Michigan. So. Okay. Warren had a propensity to, we'll call it overworking himself from time to time. And on five separate occasions during his life, as you and I talked about earlier, Dad, Warren G. Harding was a patient at the Battle Creek Sanitarium.
Yeah, no, the Battle Creek Sanitarium, again, now we're in Michigan. That was like the in place to go.
The Passages Malibu of its time.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So it's almost worth getting an addiction just so you can go to the Passages of Malibu, right? But the Battle Creek Sanitarium was like the in spot for the hoi polloi, that if you got any kind of a physical ailment or malady, that you're going to go there. One of the outtakes of that is that the doctor that was running that is a guy by the name of Kellogg, Dr. Kellogg. And he was like a holistic kind of a guy that, you know, it depends on what your diet is. And
don't tell me this is a guy with Kellogg's here.
Absolutely.
We've had weirder connections.
That's absolutely the guy.
The holistic guy came out with Kellogg's cereal.
He's the guy that came up with cornflakes as something that you should be doing. He also had a lot of what we would now think, well, I would think was kind of wacky, that you're going to get yogurt enemas to yourself. And so you're going to eat a whole lot of yogurt, but then you're also going to give yourself a yogurt
you
enema.
Eat yogurt enema, and then you got it.
Yeah. Electric shock. And everything else, but he comes up with the whole cornflakes idea, and then his brother wants to put a little sugar on it and feed it to the masses and make a lot of money.
Slap a tiger on it.
There you go. And away we went. But it's just a little interesting little side note. But I thought interesting too. Warren G is only 23 years old when he first visits the. To the sanitarium. So, I mean,
you don't have to go to the sanitarium at 23. Just you'll get to wait it out till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Gatorade and Taco Bell will solve most of your problems.
did you say what his vice was? Why he was there? Was it?
He was. This is a kind of funny thing. He was put in for nervousness disorder and exhaustion. But exhaustion is the classic rehab line. Like
it's like the Elon Musk.
Yeah. It's the Mike the Situation when he went in, they were saying it was exhaustion. It's like, nah, that dude's on coke. Look, we all know what they do. But could you imagine if you were trying to run for public office today and they were able to point to five separate times that you were put into the care of a psychiatric facility.
Yeah.
So
yeah, five times from 1889 to 1901. Mm-hmm. So in a very short span of time, he's there five times.
And they say that this exhaustion kind of plagued him his whole life, which kind of plays into the very end of his story, if you will. But did you have anything else on Battle Creek real quick to add?
No, that was pretty much Dr. John Harvey Kellogg. He was the originator of
I just looked up a picture of this place. That did not look like a health resort or rehab.
No,
this
it wasn't.
Literally looks like
– they're putting you through your paces for sure.
Yeah, this place looks sketchy. Like this is like House on Haunted Hill type shit.
Oh, God.
I can't wait to check that out then. So that's the classic kind of rehab lines when they say exhaustion. But during his stays later on in life, his wife would take care of majority of his duties both at the paper and in his political dealings as well. Now, during a trip to D.C., when he was covering it as a member of the press, Harding met and listened to a speech by a gentleman that will be another episode of this show, William Jennings Bryan, who is known as the Great Commoner. Ran for president like a million times, never won. I mean, it was like a Ross Perot kind of a thing. But heard a speech by William Jennings Bryan and immediately began campaigning for his rival, the then governor of his beloved Ohio, eventual president William McKinley. All right. Now, McKinley's an interesting guy too because we covered James A. Garfield on an episode here, and he is known as the forgotten assassinated president. But McKinley was also assassinated, which people didn't realize. And we also covered that McKinley was – this is the first time that you start seeing big business, the J.P. Morgans of the world, the Rockefellers and the Carnegies get together and they kind of make sure that the election goes towards McKinley because William Jennings Bryan is so fearful for how he's going to break down the trusts and everything like that. So we'll cover that for another episode here. But just know that our boy Warren G. is now he's firmly entrenched as a McKinley guy because, oh, he's a Republican, which Harding would love because he was a Republican. And then also he's from Ohio. So it's like – I mean it's the win.
Right.
It's like when Bill Parcells, a kid from Jersey, is coaching the Giants. All right? That's a win-win right there.
Plus he's also a big business guy rather than the commoner kind of a thing. So
absolutely.
He's all about it.
Well, so now in 1899, McKinley officially enters politics, goes into the Ohio State Senate. He begins his term there as a relative unknown and ends his time there as possibly the most popular member of the state Senate. He was known for a calm and humble demeanor. When he would pass people up, they just liked him so much that they couldn't even get angry at the ascension of his career, if you will. And legislators would ask his advice on things. He's got no legal background, really. He's just a guy that – a well-tempered
newspaper
dude.
Guy.
Yeah, newspaper
yeah.
man.
He's a schmoozer.
But these were different times too. Back then – and this is a thing that also plagues Warren G. is that like, you know, when you get a job – and there's some benefits that come with the job and then people treat you differently. That's how Warren G. looked at bribes, if you will. That, oh, of course these guys are going to take care of me. Of course I should get free railroad passes. I mean, why wouldn't I? I mean, I'm in the Ohio State Senate. This is what's – so what was kind of known as patronage back then where it's like a perk of the job would be to get all these free things. People start coming down on them for, it's all corrupt. It's all corruption. You've accepted bribes, you do. And it's in, we're just coming off the midterms right now. There was so much corruption stuff going on in the smear campaigns for everything. But that was how it was looked at back then, was that this was just a perk of the job. And he would offer free publicity to anybody who gave him free railroad passes. Man, loved them railroad passes.
He liked to travel.
Yeah. Now, around this time, he first meets because you know when you meet somebody and you realize you don't know at the time how integral they're going to be to your story, right? You know, like Anthony Cianci and me wrestle one time freshman year of high school, and I'm like, oh, I'll never wind up down in down at his family's shore house before I get at boot camp. You know? So this guy –
he was just looking for the perk, Anthony.
Yeah.
That's fine. If you're friends with him, he'll invite you down to his shore house.
There's so many stories from my head right now.
We all had that one kid who we hung out with because his house was really nice.
Yeah, or he had hot sisters.
Come on, easy.
Well, around this time, Warren G. meets a fellow by the name of Harry Daugherty, okay, who was a lobbyist, a political insider. And you can't see if you're the audio listeners. There's no visual this week, but he's a, quote, fixer, a political fixer. We're doing the air quotes.
Okay.
So definitely an interesting
guy. He's one of those guys.
He can make shit happen, and he can cover things up at the same time.
Yeah, nothing happens if he doesn't want it to happen, kind of a thing.
This is why Harding's in Senate?
Well, when he met him at the Senate, upon first meeting him, Daugherty has a quote of meeting Warren G. Then just goes, gee, what a great-looking president that guy would make. So this is
early on in Harding's political career.
Yeah, still he's at the state senate.
In Ohio, right. Ohio politics rather than the national scene just yet.
Right, and which is interesting because you see somebody and you tap them for greatness. You know what I mean?
But yeah, Harding was always known as a good-looking guy, well-dressed, well-groomed. That we'll get into that a little later on too. As a sign of the times, kind of a thing, different things that are happening on the whole scene that would be very conducive to Warren G. to ride that as far as he can.
He again, this is a guy that you never hear about when you're learning history in school. He almost never gets covered, and here he is. The dude's fascinating already, just early life alone. But now in 1903,
let's do a catch up. Ready? Okay. So Ohio guy, born of 8 kids, one of 8 siblings. Goes to – buys a newspaper.
Newspaper
bangs
man,
his
correct.
Sister piano teacher who already had a baby. He's in Senate now. Did I miss anything? That's where we're at.
How old
right?
is he at this point too?
That's a good one. I should do the math on that one. But still relatively young man.
He's
this is early
choice.
On here for him.
Yeah.
But now in 1903, Harding announces he's going to run for governor of his beloved Ohio. And he pretty much got told, no, you're not. All right. They didn't think that they were going to be able to win enough of the support for the nomination. So
yeah,
they said,
the movers and shakers decide that he's really not ready for the governorship. But
because you're still in this idea of bossism at the time too, where that there were people that were going to call, there were shot callers pretty much, and they told him that you're not running for governor, but we'll let you run as lieutenant governor for somebody else.
Lieutenant governor.
Yeah. So well, it's kind of like vice president, if you will.
But, okay.
Worked out to be a great situation for him because. As Daugherty would point out, that you don't have to do anything as lieutenant governor, but everybody has to know you and kiss your ass a little bit. So perfect gig for our boy Warren G. He goes ahead and he –
they're grooming him for bigger things.
Yeah, they're moving on with that stuff. So now in 1910, he finally is nominated for governor, and the guy running his campaign, Harry Daugherty. Okay, see how this guy, he's just clinging on to you like a fly on shit? So – but he loses the election. And this is the reason why he was losing the election is just to put the zeitgeist of 1910, if you will, is Republican Ohio is split right now because there is the surge of the Democrats and everything, the idea of the great commoner coming off the ideas of William Jennings Bryan, who never won the presidency but influenced how people ran. Kind of like you never heard about democratic socialism before Bernie Sanders, and now everybody's trying to echo his other shit too to conjure up those votes. But anyway, the reason why the Republicans are split right now is because there's an ongoing feud between Teddy Roosevelt, American badass, and William Howard Taft, American fat ass. So
Big Bill.
Yeah. Well, Roosevelt had tapped Taft as his kind of planned successor that is like, you're going to continue our plan for America. Where this is the swelling nationalism, all that other stuff. And then Taft and him just couldn't get along after Roosevelt left office. So what winds up happening here is that Harding, in order to try to make a political maneuverability kind of a thing, he jumps onto the, quote, Taft train. So he winds up supporting Taft and even speaks at the Republican National Convention, of which he was a chairman, on behalf of William Howard Taft. And he tried making things happen but just could not get the Republicans to come together because Harding was a Republican through and through. Literally, Teddy Roosevelt, when he finds out he's not getting the nomination – for the Republican Party to try to run for president again, he literally says, screw you guys, I'm going home.
Right? Yeah, but he goes even a little further.
Creates his own party.
That's right.
So
wow.
It reminds me of there was an episode of The Simpsons.
King
where,
Petty.
Yeah, very King Petty. There was an episode of The Simpsons when Homer decided to run on the keg party platform. literally, Teddy Roosevelt goes on and creates the – what's the name of the party, Dad?
The Bull Moose Party.
So it's technically the Progressive Party, but they call it the Bull Moose Party, and it's his staunch – like literally Roosevelt leaves with his people. So those they decide they're not going to vote they won't vote for Taft to toe the party line. They're going to vote for their guy. So what happens is when there's infighting like that in the Republican Party, it splits the support, and now the guy who they didn't think was going to be able to win, the Democratic nominee, goes ahead and he takes it. Now, funny story. We're talking a lot about Ohio here today. You know, we're going to sneak in right now.
Hey, there's the Jersey connection.
Little Jersey reference here for you. The winner of the presidential election that year, due to the split votes from the infighting within the Republican Party, is New Jersey Governor Woodrow Wilson wins the presidency.
Wow, there we go.
There you go.
Center of the universe here. Center of the shared universe. So now in 1914, Harding wins a landslide for the U.S. Senate to represent his beloved Ohio. This was again orchestrated by his pal Daugherty, who told him, hey, dude, you got to go run.
Daugherty is one more time. He's the guy that makes he's the kingmaker.
They refer to him as a Mephisto-like, which is a German demon that's kind of like pulling all the strings behind the scenes for everything evil and, you know.
Oh, he's Rumpelstiltskin.
Essentially, yeah.
He makes stuff happen.
So,
not always on the up and up, but, you know.
But he'll get it done, Ray Donovan.
Under the table dealings or whatever. Okay.
It's a little Ray Donovan to him, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
But Harding, the quote from Daugherty actually was that he walked in, he said, Warren was just a turtle sitting there on a rock sunning himself. All I did was kick him in the water. So,
what a quote. So,
Daugherty is a fascinating guy too, and we're going to get more into him later, which is baffling shit. But Harding refused to seize the opportunity. In Ohio at the time, there was an anti-Catholic kind of a thing going on, and the guy he was running against was Catholic. So he refused to bash him because he was old friends with the guy he was running against. But the reason why Ohio was starting to have these anti-papist sentiments, if you will, is because there was the idea that Catholics were beholden to a king still. So how can you have democracy in America when you're still swearing allegiance to a king in a pointy hat back in the Vatican? So a little bit of nervous times here for the Catholics. But Harding wouldn't bash him. He also wouldn't stop people from bashing him either. So Harding was very good at
accepting
criticism.
Oh, yeah. Right. He had other people take care of the bashing part, so he still looks like the good guy.
It's one of my favorite episodes of Louie is when Dane Cook and him have their sit-down between Louis C.K. and Dane Cook over the allegations of joke thieves. And he goes, I never said you stole from me, man. He goes, yeah, but you didn't stop people from saying I stole from you. So now, here's where some of that political nuance, right? I'm not going to bash my Catholic friend, but I'm also going to make sure that I get all the non-Catholic votes. Here's his position on suffrage and his position on prohibition. He showed nuance here because his wife definitely wanted to vote. There's no doubt. I think we can all agree on that one. The way that he made his move on that one, he goes, well, I can't support women's suffrage at a national level when we don't do it in Ohio yet. So that's his way of saying like, we'll get around, because he knows by the time it gets enough support to pass, now he can sit there and say that he wasn't an opponent of it.
Right. He never opposed it, but he never really was in the forefront of supporting it.
Exactly.
Either.
So, and it's I think so too. The other thing is that, you know, if you think about it, there's a you ever get around an Italian woman from New Jersey long enough, and you're like, how do we take your rights away? I can't deal with this. I've dated enough of them.
This is how the Snooki party starts, man. You got to you got to chill with that.
The Snooki, that's genius. That's well, the way that he handled it, because now he was a heavy drinker too. Loved his booze, all right? Loved his booze, loved to smoke cigars, cigarettes, everything he could get his hand on. So he goes ahead and he decides that he's going to vote in favor of prohibition, right, which is going to take away the ability to drink alcohol because he knows that it won't get passed, so they won't ratify the bill. So he's like, oh, well, I can look good by saying this knowing that it's going to fail. So it's like – it's me sitting there like, oh, yeah, I supported my friend to do stand-up for the first time. They bombed like assholes, but I get to sit there and say how supportive I am of him.
So, you're still looking like a good guy, but
– oh, yeah. You get to look like the good dude, but you still get to – you know, it's having your cake and eating it too, except in this instance, cake is bourbon.
Now, how drastically does that backfire?
Oh, it blows up in everybody's face. You're talking about the creation of bootlegging. You're talking about the Volstead Act. You're talking about everything from Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
And this is the time. God.
Right.
I wonder how differently things would have turned out if he was like, nah, like I'm not about this bill. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, they say almost nothing changed. I'm not sure anything actually would have changed because all that money just could have been made by the government. Instead, we opened it up to bootleggers who it was, you know, these people lifted themselves up by their bootstraps. And now you have crime is running big business
right
in the country.
Now you have big, you've got a major revenue stream supporting crime.
You literally started it.
It's the same thing. There's so many things that echo this too with the marijuana legislation right now that they want to make sure that that doesn't happen again. So that's why corporations are kind of running all of the corporate stuff for legalization stuff for marijuana, is they want to make sure that the business can be implemented where the country makes money off of it, not Anthony Scionti's grow farm that he has downstairs in his basement.
Perfect.
Well, now during this time frame too, they've also had agreed to expand the power of the president during times of war. He was actually in favor of the Espionage Act of 1917, which essentially was the Patriot Act of its day. So Harding's an interesting guy here because it's like, oh, well, during times of war, the president shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I mean, in 1917, we're in the middle of World War One, so mm-hmm. I mean, it's a timely thing. There's a vast turmoil, if you will, all over the world, not just the United States.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about trying to run the country during possibly the craziest time the world has ever seen? Because the modern world happens in the span of World War One. That at the start of World War One, a great podcast I listened to called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, he breaks it down how the start of World War One, you still have like Napoleonic era uniforms on the battlefield.
If horses, swords, yeah, right?
They're
right.
Still cavalry.
Horses charging machine guns.
But you know what changes that shit real fast? Mustard gas, machine guns,
planes.
Tanks, airplanes, submarine warfare. I mean, the modern world happens like a bolt of lightning. It just happens. And these guys are trying to sit there and be like, well, how do we advance while also retaining what we have, you know, the life we want to get back to.
Right.
Can you imagine that day, like between battles, one day everyone's fighting with muskets and fucking wearing Napoleon era like garb and shit. And all of a sudden the next day, charge! And they just see machine guns and they're like, what the hell do we do now? Yeah.
It's essentially like a revolutionary Minutemen attempting to charge the field and realizing that it's just all T-1000s for Judgment Day. So,
oh my God.
Well, now in 1920, all right, you got a presidential election coming up. You're out of the war now at this point. It's done, okay? Woodrow Wilson wanted to run again for another term.
Did we start prohibition yet, 1920? Or?
Right at 1920 is when prohibition comes in. What's interesting is when the Volstead Act actually started in 1920, but there was already like 20 states that had passed similar legislation at a state level prior to it going national with the Volstead Act. But
I think it's funny that temperance and suffrage are two words that are interesting. So women were largely in favor of temperance, which was not drinking alcohol, and a lot of them were in favor of suffrage, which was giving them the right to vote. But just based off of how the words sound, if you were told that temperance meant that you were tolerant for women, you wanted them to vote – and then not having alcohol sounds like suffrage. That sounds like a word.
You're going to suffer. So, yeah, 1920 is pretty huge because, again, that's the first presidential election that we're going to have the female vote involved with that. It never, you know, that was the first.
Well, I've always seen 1920 as like
prohibition
the biggest
is
year
coming
in
history. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. No. I've always seen 1920 as just the biggest thing in history. Like a lot of shit just started in this
again, the modern
year.
World.
It's
boom,
a flapper,
overnight.
Like
that's
literally
it. Jazz right. And
we're just coming. We're just getting off of the First World War, and you know how many people had died from that. It's not a good time. There's a post-war depression, so economically. There's a lot of people out of jobs. There's all kinds of strikes going on in the aftermath of the First World War. The wartime boom that was going on collapsed. Politicians are arguing over peace treaties and the question of America's entry into the League of Nations, which was a Woodrow Wilson kind of a thing.
Yep, and we refuse to enter.
A lot of people don't want that because we just got embroiled with a European war and lost how many American lives over what France and Germany and Russia and England were, and Italy and Austria and Turkey and all these other people that kind of embroiled us into that. So the League of Nations was not a real popular thing. Overseas, there's still wars and revolutions going on.
The Russians, Bolsheviks in Russia.
Yeah, the Russians just went through a revolution. At home here in the United States in 1919, the year prior to the 1920 presidential election, there's major strikes in the meatpacking and the steel industry. There's large race riots in Chicago. in Chicago, a race riot took place that killed 23 people were killed. So, I mean, and now in bringing in prohibition, you got your pro-drinkers and your temperance folks. You hit upon it earlier, Kev, too, with the hostilities that were still brought to the Irish Catholic, and now also the Germans. You know, we just fought a war with the Germans, and now it was really a German heavy influence in the beer production kind of a thing. So the Irish and the Germans were like anti-prohibition.
And now also keep in mind, we just got done with a war in Germany, okay, where we were fighting the Germans. The biggest population, the biggest immigrant population to the United States at the time was German.
Right, so. Right. And with the economy being as bad as it was, you know, and all these immigrants coming in, now they're trying to take my job. There's major labor strikes with the railroads, as I say, with the meat packing.
Well, when the Germans would come in, I believe that when they were taking jobs, they started being referred to as schnitzelbacks. Is that correct, Ed?
Schnitzelbacks? Yeah, that's you got me on that one.
Fantastic.
Oh, man. Yo. That was a slow burner of a joke. Oh, man, I
also
loved it.
Also for the 1920s, I believe, just to make sure, because my father did do a great job of setting the table with that. It is the first time that the female vote is going to come into play, and one of the first women that was able to vote – right before she was going to vote, they said, "Well, what do you want? Who do you want to win the presidency?" She goes, "I don't know. What do you want?"
The 20s don't sound all that roaring now that you like the way you described it too. I remember in school, like they always say like the 20s were
the
like,
roaring 20s.
The roaring 20s, like things were booming, and then 1920, it sounds like shit. It's at its worst.
In order to boom, you have to bow, if you will. So we're gonna the explosion of the 1920s is about to happen. Did you have anything else you wanted to do to set the table?
No, it's just your roaring 20s thing is really we're a little early for the 20s to really get roaring.
Okay.
Right? We're still getting over the first.
I don't know
World
why. I always just assumed like 20s hit boom, like things were just good. Like they never explained the bow kind of to it.
Right.
But all right.
We're hitting the trough, and before we start,
all right, cool,
peeking up to the roaring 20s, and then of course the Great Depression.
So what's going on with the men who built America at this time?
they're going to start
making
playing
money.
A role here, man.
So are they? So they're moving and shaking.
They are. They come into play a little bit
later
with what happens here, because now it's 1920, and Teddy Roosevelt's dead. Woodrow Wilson is not running for another term because they're fearful of his health. So Roosevelt's dead, which opens up the nomination wide open for the Republicans because they thought Roosevelt was definitely going to run again. You're going to reunite the Republican Party. Names being thrown around for the nomination for the Republicans include General Blackjack Pershing, who is a true badass. I mean, I can't do an episode of American Loser on him just based out of respect. He's too cool.
The name alone.
Blackjack Pershing.
Yeah, well, you know where the little side note, I don't think we spoke of this before, but I just finished reading a book on Blackjack. He got that nickname Blackjack because he was the leader of the Buffalo soldiers, the all-black regiment.
No shit.
And had white leadership, and he was put in charge of the Buffalo soldiers. So when he goes back to West Point to teach, a lot of his compatriots, if you will, give him the nickname. It was the N-word, Jack Pershing, and then it was later kind of reduced down to black. Yeah, it was PC'd to become Black Jack Pershing because he led the black troops. Yeah,
I had no clue on that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Other people that are having their names thrown around: eventual President Herbert Hoover and eventual President Calvin Coolidge. So you got this wide field of nominations here. The dark horse of this one is Warren G. Harding. But guess who he taps as his campaign manager, Ant?
The guy whose name starts with a D.
Yep, Darty.
Darty.
Darty. Yep.
I know you're Italian and these Irish names are hard for you because there's not enough vowels in it.
I'm just bad with names.
No, don't worry about it. So Darty comes back in as the campaign manager, okay? And his move was to show how respectable of a man Warren G. Harding was, and that you could sell them on this idea of a return to normalcy. Like my dad just said up here, crazy, crazy times heading into the 1920 election. You want to go back in time if you can, but also be a part of the modern world. So the return to normalcy, it really appeals to people. So
yeah, one more thing that I didn't point out too is that the year prior to that election, the world went through a heavy-duty flu epidemic, the Spanish flu, that millions died. American soldiers were killed by the flu epidemic than
the actual
than
war.
Actual on the battlefield.
God damn.
And people
Spanish flu.
Yeah, and then in
didn't Bill Cosby have it? No, I'm sorry, that's Spanish fly.
Yeah. But I mean it was some serious stuff. People walking around with masks the whole time because you know, they had no way of really overcoming that other than riding it out. The guy who ran the subway system for New York City was asking the various businesses to put people on staggered shifts so they wouldn't have the overcrowded subway contaminating more people with this whole thing. It was some scary stuff just to even be going out of the house to have somebody promise that we're going to return to normal situation where you don't have to worry about.
Right, the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days.
A little "Make America Great Again" type attitude. With that. That was what was appealing for that with people. Now, Harding is now in approaching the 1920 election here. People already know for the most part because it's not. This part doesn't impact the story because we have a ton more we have to talk about. But 1920, he's being groomed to be the president. He'll be dead within 3 years. Okay, he dies in 1923. But Harding is now – he has no clue of this. He had some health problems or anything like that. But like we said, he drank, he smoked, he overate. He was a big guy. He wasn't a spring chicken anymore either. But
what did him dirty in the end?
Oh, wait till you see, buddy. Now, Harding
to
tries
to – this point, he's not an American loser. There's – Other
yeah,
than
so
a
far it's pretty good life.
Campaign
yeah,
manager.
He's
yeah,
a
so
politician.
Far,
okay. Yeah.
So far, some standards to shady shit, but like still relatively.
Yeah. Everybody likes him.
Kind of cool.
It's not what you do. It's how you're remembered.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to tease
so
that.
So he's got 3 years to go way downhill.
He's a politician, so he's still a lying liar in the lies they tell, but we're getting there.
All right.
Getting there.
Now, he gets the shit kicked out of himself in the he wins Ohio. He wins the primary in Ohio, but gets the shit kicked out of himself in Indiana, finishes fourth on the ballot, which is so bad that he attempts to resign over the phone with Daugherty. The phone is then grabbed out of his hand by Florence, who says, "You tell Harry Daugherty we're in this to the bitter end until hell freezes over." Will not allow her husband to step down as the candidate here. Now, as the dark horse candidate, his respectable nature, and like we said, the return to normalcy was so popular, but it also the big ticket item for him was a lack of scandal. So there was no scandals you could really put on him.
Except for the black thing.
Well, there was the black thing that was interesting, which comes into play as well, because he it plagued him his entire career.
Yeah.
But he had one thing. He had one when they asked Daugherty, is there any scandals we have to worry about with this guy? He had one extramarital affair. But that ended abruptly in 1920. So that was like something he had a side piece kind of a thing. He had a little Monica Lewinsky going in.
He was
for
a politician.
Him. Well said.
And if he's going home to Florence, who's
he did have sex
not
with that
the
woman.
Shrinking violet that maybe.
Yeah, Florence is a ball buster. So it's like, you know, you want to have, if that's his business partner more than his wife, then he needs a little.
He cheated on the piano teacher? Come on.
He
man.
Did. Yeah. Now, through a quick series of great, short, and fast speeches, which was really well enjoyed by the Chicago crowd at the RNC that year because the heat was absolutely blistering. So if you had a guy come in there and be like, "Hey, guys," in 30 seconds or less and makes you the sales pitch and leaves, you're like, "Man, that guy was great." They didn't have any time to sit there and realize how hot they were or how much they were sweating through their clothes or anything. So this awesome response to the speeches in the name of Mr. Warren G. Harding. People thought highly of him, right? So now this leads us into one. This is – Daugherty coins this term, but this is a famous term, and it gets used all the time. It's part of the national canon, if you will, in terms of our dialogue. June 11th into June 12th of that year is known as the Night of the Smoke-Filled Room. So I was talking earlier with you, and power isn't running for president. Power is running someone for president.
Okay.
So this room full of, all the elders, if you will.
Yeah.
Damn. down.
Right. So you're like, okay.
Yeah, you walk in here. It's literally like a poker night that they're deciding who's going to be the next president of the United States. So
the actual puppet masters.
Exactly. And they're sitting there, and it's the deliberations. They went all night. They needed a nominee. This is not a joke here. The kingmakers of the Republican Party needed to finish it that night because they didn't have any clean shirts left for their trip. They were out of laundry. So this had to be decided.
Must be nice.
Right.
Now, there's rumors that Warren had possibly shown up there at one point. Daugherty was definitely in the building on this one. I mean, it's definitely a powerhouse of people and the kingmakers, literally. Did you have anything else on the Night of Smoker Room, Dad?
No, that was it. That, you know, I found it interesting that that's where that whole phrase was coined, really. It was in the Republican nomination with Mr. Daugherty.
Yeah, and like we said now, Daugherty gets to sell Warren G. Harding as this clean candidate that it's going to be scandal-free for the most part. Everybody loves him. You just got to get to know him.
He's a good guy. Yeah. Everybody likes him. He's a good-looking guy. He's well-groomed, well-thought-of, and there's no skeletons in his closet that we really know of, so... let's go for it.
Which was beautiful. So now, in order to do that, because sometimes when you have the fractures within the parties, you got to throw an establishment guy with a maverick or a maverick with an establishment guy. You know what I mean?
Or a goose.
Yeah. Maverick and goose. A Top Gun. Our first Top Gun reference here. That was well played. But they go ahead and they decide to throw in a crowd favorite, the governor of Massachusetts, Calvin Coolidge. Cool Cal, one of the greatest presidents of all time, is now the vice president to one of the worst presidents of all time, just to show you the duality of the office. But Coolidge was very popular because of how he handled the Boston police strike when he was the governor. So he goes, what you got, Cahoons?
I just found the wildest a second Jersey connection.
Hit me.
So Warren had the affair, right?
Yes.
The daughter was born in our own local Asbury Park.
No shit. That's right. Wow. Oh, my God. And wait till you see what they do with that on Boardwalk Empire, Kahuna.
Wait, what?
Oh, boy. That
plays into Boardwalk Empire?
don't be a spoiler for the
boy. I think that's season three.
She makes an appearance. I'll put it that way.
Get the fuck out of here. All right.
Solid Jersey connection, though. Now, they go ahead and they give the nomination to Warren G. Harding. But it's very funny, too, because Harding refused to campaign. He decides he's going to run like his buddy McKinley, the former governor of Ohio, who was the president and assassinated that he campaigned for. He has his front porch remodeled to resemble McKinley's and then runs a very similar campaign of a front porch style, which means that he doesn't come to you, you come to him. So that's like if Kahuna was running for president and you only
Kahuna
did interviews. Yeah, you only did interviews at a shared universe network. So they have to come to you. You're on your turf, man. You want to walk outside and go speak to the delegates? Right. You go do it, man. So,
I heard reports that his front lawn had to be ripped up and they put gravel down because all the newspaper men and everybody that was coming to see him during his campaign, if you will, just completely destroyed the front yard. So they put gravel. This is a Jersey Shore thing.
Yeah, they look like he's from Tom's River now.
Just put gravel down.
Yo, Larry, you want to be my running mate?
You do need a respectable man.
I'm not sure why I go him. Check for skeletons in the closet.
Well, where it gets even more interesting now is that the people that he's running against, you now have Coolidge, who would go on to become one of the best presidents. You got Warren G. Harding, who's now running here as well, an Ohio guy. Now, who he's running against, the Democratic nominee, is James M. Cox and his vice president. You want to take a wild stab, man?
Cox's?
Teddy Roosevelt is dead.
Okay.
So guess who might be running as the vice president?
To Cox.
Yes.
Balls.
Close. Very close. Mr. Franklin Quite Delano close. Roosevelt. So FDR is running as the VP now. So you got a lot of big heads all kind of smashing into each other here in this 1920 election. Cox and FDR run all over the country, campaign endlessly. Our boy Warren G. just kind of gets like, yeah, I'm just going to stay here in Ohio.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the front porch.
And the whole campaign.
Yep. Didn't really go anywhere. The only person who toured around a little bit was Coolidge, did the short up the East Coast votes because he was a popular Massachusetts guy. And he also did a little bit of time down south or whatever.
Cool down?
Yeah, exactly. So what was interesting is that this election actually offered little real choice. I mean, these candidates are essentially – both were newspapermen, Cox and McKinley, from Ohio. So it's two Ohio guys with editor backgrounds.
Coolidge.
Mm-hmm.
Coolidge. I'm sorry.
Cox.
Yeah. he's the sitting governor. He's the sitting governor of Ohio.
Yes.
And Harding is the sitting senator from Ohio.
Right.
So they're both, and they're both newspaper guys.
So now they're both that, and then also they're essentially both fiscal conservatives, right? Who are begrudging progressives, if you will. So it's not. These are kind of – you're getting the same thing no matter who really wins this election. But Harding now wins in a landslide. Okay, landslide election. 60% of the vote goes to Warren G. Harding. All right, 37% of the vote goes to Cox. 3% of the vote goes to Eugene Debs, a socialist who ran from prison. Okay, Debs is a fascinating guy too. I do want to do an episode on him down the road, so I won't focus too much there. But 3% of the vote went to a guy campaigning from prison. So can you imagine the travel bills for Cox when he's going all around the country with FDR, and then you realize that you lost to the dude who didn't leave Ohio, leave his front porch, and then a guy who campaigned from prison did pretty good
too. He got a nod anyhow. So. Yeah, I think that was the largest popular vote margin landslide in all presidential election history.
At that point, yeah.
At that point.
Well, again, this return to normalcy he's campaigning on, pretty good sounding.
Everybody likes it.
So welcome to President Warren G. That's Warren G. Harding, not Warren G., the hip-hop artist. He wins the presidency, all right? He doesn't campaign at all. Wins the presidency, first thing he does, going on vacation. Goes down to Texas, plays a lot of golf, which he enjoyed. Made a lot of good cabinet positions. Mr. Mellon was brought in of the Carnegie Mellon fame. Okay, so you want to talk about the men who built America. Mellon was one of the richest men in the entire country at this time. He's now a member of Warren G.'s cabinet. Coolidge, obviously, in as the vice president. Herbert Hoover was brought in. He was going to be the secretary of state, so he was dealing with a lot of the international affairs. Because, again, you have a fractured Germany at this time. You got the Russian Bolsheviks trying to figure out what the hell to do with all of them. The start of the USSR is happening. Crazy, crazy time to be involved in international politics. And the U.S. is on its rise to becoming, you know, the great world, the superpower that it is. The other thing that he decides to put in his attorney general, Mr. Daugherty, comes back in yet again. Campaign manager is made his attorney general. Highly criticized, all right? But everyone knew exactly why he needed him around. It was – okay. Well, we don't really need an attorney general, but I do need him. I need this
He's
guy to be able to.
He's the guy that got me here, so.
I need a parking space up front.
Yeah. So. You're just going to see him roaming around.
Well, now Harding, oddly, very popular with a lot of black Americans, too. And for the weirdest reason why. First of all, there's the allegations that he might be of some African descent. So there is the idea that he could be the first black president. Again, later disproved. But. He also was in favor of what is considered a racist practice of literacy tests at the polls, okay? That was done, some people felt, in order to make sure that blacks couldn't vote, because if you can't read and write your name, why should you be able to vote? That was the theory at the time. And it was done to suppress black voters. Warren G., highly in favor of literacy tests, but the reason it made him so popular with black Americans is because he said, I think everybody should be taking literacy tests, not just – don't just make it for just the black essentially, right. Descendants of slaves.
Make it for everyone.
Yeah, make it for everybody. And if you want to shut like a dumb redneck up real quick, and they're coming over here. You got to take a
they're
test.
They're coming over here. They're going to take over here.
Right.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, mister?
Sign
come on
name.
Over. Why don't you do a literacy test?
Right.
I think you would probably have about 8% of the population would be able to vote.
Yeah. And the literacy tests they were giving only to the black voters prior to that.
Yes.
The vast majority of the general public would not be able to pass. I mean, they deliberately made it so that you're not going to be able to pass that literacy test.
Who is the president
of
the Senate?
And the previous president, Woodrow Wilson, was certainly not pro-black. He insisted on keeping the army troops segregated against Black Jack Pershing's wishes, who was the commander – not the commander-in-chief, but the head of all the U.S. forces in Europe during the First World War. So, yeah, he made some friends there.
So a pretty progressive move at the time here too, which is cool on that one. But now despite a little bit of economic turbulence, Harding was considered a shoo-in for re-election in 1923. Wins in 1920, right? 1924, he's going to go ahead and he's assumed – that he's going to easily win his re-election here. Now, some historians believe that he knew that he might not have been long for this world. We talked about how I already spoiled it that he's going to die in office, right? He dies in 1923. But some historians believe that he probably knew that he wasn't long for the world because he ate and he drank, he smoked so much. But in 1923, he sells his paper, the Marion Star, and ensures that a large estate would be left behind for his family. Old Penny Pinchin Florence was involved with that shit.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll have a little more on that as we progress here.
Well,
as far as selling the paper.
I want to talk about that real quick, too, because his mental and his physical health continue to be worrisome to those close to him. But it was hidden from the papers. They were always talking about how, he's recovering. You know what I mean? No, don't worry about it. He's sick right now, but he's going to be fine.
Yeah, different times, too, though. I mean, when FDR was president, he was never really photographed in a wheelchair. After he was succumbed to the polio kind of a thing. So it was a different kind of a media at that time.
I didn't like FDR. He never stood for the national anthem.
Okay.
Talk to me about the selling of the Marion Star, please, LP.
Well, later on, once some of these scandals started to hit, we'll get to it a little bit later on, but he sold the paper for what a lot of people felt was he got a lot more money for the paper than what it was really worth. But we'll
still just an Ohio paper?
But you're buying the president's paper.
Right. Yeah.
That's
right.
An interesting one there. Harding goes on what is called the Voyage of Understanding, which kind of an interesting move. They wanted to reduce his schedule because he was not doing well physically. He did have a history of mental exhaustion, if you will. So they decide they're going to cut back on his stuff. So he's going to travel, which is a good way to build up press and start your reelection process, while also giving you a reduced schedule to try to get over your shit. Harding becomes the first sitting president to visit Alaska, all right? So he visits Alaska for the first time, speaks there. He even says, I expect statehood for this territory.
How's he traveling? Is he driving
by train
to
across? Yeah.
From all those
train.
Years of building up those
Segway
train
scooter,
passes.
Actually.
Yeah.
Segway.
Oh, no. It's actually the hoverboard.
Yeah.
Well, Harding also visits he's the first sitting president to travel to Canada as well. So he's now showing abroad. He's doing a little bit of foreign policy, if you will, while he's over there. Like we said, the travel is supposed to be a laid-back schedule, and it was not. This was a big trip here. Now, in San Francisco, on July 27th, 1923, Harding calls for his doctor in the middle of the night, claiming he was having heart problems, couldn't really breathe. Now, they say that he probably did have heart problems to begin with, had that whole history of mental exhaustion, physical ailments, and he never fully recovered from pneumonia that he had had earlier in the year. So he's now sitting there. And Florence comes to him in San Francisco in his hotel room and reads to him a flattering article from the Saturday Evening Post, which was like the big paper of the time. The article is literally called A Calm Review of a Calm Man. All right. And the president's last words were, while Florence was fluffing his pillow while reading him an article about how great of a guy he is, "That's good, Florence. Read some more." That's his last words. Fucking dies. Doesn't even hear the end of his own story. But
damn.
Warren G. Harding, the 29th president of the United States, is now dead from a heart attack at age 57. The funeral is massively attended. Crowds along the railroad track bringing his body back west. People just want to see the train that's carrying the president. I mean, they're turning out in the thousands here. The coverage would be nonstop. If there was a CNN or a Fox News back in the day, they would have the train cam. They'd have a helicopter flying. They'd have a little graph showing what what path the train's going to be on, which is essentially just a railroad. But now, this is the part I was excited about. Ant, you're a big car guy, right? You've been a big car guy.
A dabble.
As long as I've known you, you've been a big car guy. This was the big kid, the excited kid on Christmas moment that I was happy to tell you about. The attendees of his funeral included current president Calvin Coolidge, who, by the way, was sworn into office by his father, Herbert Hoover, who would go on to become another president, Thomas Alva Edison, the creator of the electric chair, a nice West Orange boy, as covered in another episode.
And the light bulb.
Right.
fellow by the name of Henry Ford.
There you go.
Who was a good friend. And another attendee of the funeral, Harvey Firestone. So Firestone, right. Ford, Edison, Hoover, Coolidge. This is a who's who,
wow,
of 1923, all in attendance for our friend Warren G. The fallen president, the nation mourns. All right. But like we were saying, the president was loved in life, but it's not about how you were. It's about how you're remembered. So when people talk about – they always say it too. If you go back through history, they always say this is the worst – if it wasn't your president, you would say, this is the worst president of all time, and then you start remembering him more fondly, right? Like all the Democrats that talk about how much they hate Trump right now are like, man, W. Bush was great. Yeah. I was like, I watched you hang him in effigy.
You're just with Michelle Obama. Yeah. And Bush. Like, are they cute? Yeah. It's like, what?
So absence makes the heart grow fonder in most cases. Now, in this case, a lot of shit that was kind of kept quiet starts coming out into the open here. The corrupt members of his cabinet, of which there were many, not all members were corrupt, but there were many corrupt members of his cabinet who started being referred to as the Ohio Gang, all right? And they hung out in an infamous little place that all the Washington, D.C. insiders knew as the Little House on K Street, which was essentially where they'd have those night of smoke-filled room, right, for the RNC back in Chicago. These guys were essentially all of his cabinet members getting together, playing poker and figuring out how they're going to rip off the country.
So basically, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
If imagine that podcast. I would listen to that
Shay,
podcast.
Yeah, Shay, how are we going to screw the middle class? Right. Pass the poker chips.
That's what it was. Crazy. Now, they fall into a couple of scandals. There's a Veterans Bureau scandal that's interesting. This is all stemming from that little house on K Street with their poker nights. Now, the most infamous scandal that's going to come to light here for Warren G. Harding is something known as Teapot Dome. Dad, what the fuck is Teapot Dome?
Teapot Dome, there was a guy that was appointed, Albert Fall, in the Teapot Dome scandal. Now, Albert Fall was part of Harding's cabinet, if you will, and he goes on to become the first American in history to be serving time for his involvement with the Teapot Dome scandal.
Sounds like he might have been the fall guy.
Yeah. Well, we had to work on that.
But what
he
name
was the first
for
American to be convicted of a felony committed while holding a cabinet post. Fall is the U.S. Secretary of the Interior. Through maneuverings, Harding takes away these oil right holdings. Oil rights were very important to the Navy because the U.S. Navy was in the transitional period of moving everything from coal-fired ships to go oil driven.
Just to give it a sense of the current state too, we're also now moving more towards because they went to gas propulsion when I was in the Navy. Majority of the ships moving forward are now going to be nuclear powered.
Right. So better energy source with oil as opposed to what was coal. This guy Fall is now the Secretary of the Interior, and through some maneuverings, these oil rights called Teapot Dome in Wyoming, and there was other oil rights or oil reserves in California. He arranges to have these now going under the auspices of the Interior rather than the Navy, and he sells off these rights, and the chief
it's like selling a car you don't own.
There you go. And the biggest guy that was buying these oil rights was a guy by the name of Harry Sinclair. Yeah, that's Sinclair. Sinclair Oil. Sinclair buys these rights from Fall through some maneuverings, and it was later found out that Sinclair paid Fall like $300,000 worth of securities, unsecured loans, quote unquote loans that he was given, huge vast tracts of property and livestock in his private residence in, I believe it was New Mexico. Anyhow, the long and the short of this is that Sinclair now owns what he thinks are the oil rights that is this area called Teapot Dome, which is a huge oil reserve. They start drilling out there with these scandalous dealings in the background. And then somebody notices that there's Sinclair oil trucks or oil equipment that's out at this Teapot Dome, and word comes back to fall that, like, hey, there's somebody else working one this oil field that I was supposed to, Sinclair was supposed to be the guy that had the exclusive rights to this Teapot Dome. There's another guy that's already out there drilling before Sinclair even shows up, a guy by the name of Colonel James G. Darden. Fall goes nuts because Sinclair is going nuts. And I thought I had the exclusive deal on this.
So now you've taken a car you don't own and you're selling it to someone, but another dude's driving it.
Well, another guy is holding the title, if you will. So it's the same property that was sold twice unscrupulously. So
we've actually overbooked this flight. If anyone would care to be bumped for a future,
there you go.
Delta Airlines.
If you raise your hand, you'll be given a voucher.
Yeah. Fall now goes to Harding and saying, we got a problem here because this guy Darden is out on the Teapot Dome oil fields, and he's drilling, and Sinclair is pissed off, and you know everybody's at one another. And Fall, right, catch this now, Fall, the Secretary of the Interior, is asking the President of the United States to send in the Marines to push Darden off the oil fields that he thinks he owns exclusively, only it was exclusive to somebody else besides. So
this reminds me of an episode of Cops where a woman came up to an officer and said, hey, that person just robbed me. And he said, "They go over. Is it true that you robbed this woman? Yeah, man. She was buying crack."
There you go. So you're stealing the stuff that I already stole. So anyhow, Fall is like really getting all nervous and jerky here because, you know, this whole thing is blown up in his face. And this whole Teapot Dome thing was agreed to, if you will, by Harding. But I don't think really Harding had an idea of really how deeply involved this thing was really going.
They do say he most likely did not know exactly how nefarious the little house on K Street was making things happen.
Right.
So it's almost like the Iran-Contra thing with Reagan, that Reagan really didn't know a lot of the shit that was going on in his own building. But so Harding's not necessarily complicit with all this, but he certainly knows some shit's up.
He knows that what's going on is not on the total up and up, and I think it was kind of like, I really don't want to know that, you know, if I don't know, I can't be pinned to it. But at the same time, he's definitely involved.
Hoover had a quote in his biography of a discussion with Harding where they were talking. He said Harding asked Hoover, what would you do if you knew that there was a conspiracy or corruption going on within your administration? And Hoover said, well, I probably confront it and then get the integrity points from the public for trying to have to handle business the right way, you know, rather than suppress it and kind of lie about it and anything. And then Harding's kind of like nodding. He goes, okay. And he goes, Hoover asks, goes, does this involve Daugherty? And the conversation ended abruptly.
Right.
So he definitely knew something was up. But continue, sir.
Yeah, I mean, Harding was quoted by a newspaper editor at the time. He says, I have no trouble with my enemies. I can take care of my enemies all right. But my damn friends, my goddamn friends, they're the ones who keep me walking the floors at night.
Jeez.
So I was like, holy crap. Yo. You know, all these Ohio boys, they're the Ohio gang, they're the ones that are keeping me awake at night. And Harding did speak to Hoover about that while he was on that 4-day boat voyage to Alaska.
So this is where the term thrown under the bus comes from.
Yeah. If you knew of a great scandal in your administration, he's asking Hoover, if you knew of a great scandal, so catch this now, you got the President of the United States asking his vice president for advice. He said, if you knew of a great scandal in our administration, would you, for the good of the country and the party, expose it publicly, or would you bury it? Hoover said he advised the president to expose it, but Harding declined, fearing political repercussions. Harding himself had personally approved the Fall's plan to lease the oil reserves, although he may not have paid much attention about what was approved, you know, what was really going to go, what were the repercussions beyond that. Harding may have also benefited from the dealings. In his cross-country trip, Harding accepted a high offer. This is where I was alluding to before. Harding accepted an extremely high offer to buy the Marion Star, his old newspaper. and a deal that some believe was orchestrated by Sinclair. Sinclair being the guy that bought the rights to the Teapot Dome oil field. So,
again, all patronage, not bribery.
Right,
patronage.
Right, right. So I paid an exorbitant amount of money for your newspaper. It was just because I really think you're a good guy. The president and his wife, Florence, also told friends about how they had this year-long, all-expenses-paid cruise around the world that they had planned to take, along with 50 of their friends once Harding was out of office, right? So they're already making plans for this around-the-world cruise. And once Harding's four-year term was over, the cruise had likely been promised by Sinclair, who was to take place on Sinclair's luxury yacht. So,
Jesus.
You know, it's was he involved directly? Well, maybe not directly, but, you know, old Warren G was going to be taken care of if this deal went through.
I do want to get into the aftermath of this as well here, because we're coming up on bonus time.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
well, there's also, because I didn't quite understand this fully myself, but the Bureau of Veterans Affairs, which the VA, which I use for my personal health care, because I'm a veteran, and I'm very grateful for that, because I broke my ankle, they covered it. I tore my ACL, they covered it. I mean, every dumb thing I've done, thank God I had the VA backing me up on that one. But relatively new institution around the time of Harding.
Right. It was during Harding's administration that there was
the birth of the VA.
The Veterans Bureau.
So
right. It wasn't the VA just yet, but it was the forerunner to the VA, the Veterans Bureau.
Now, what's the scandal involving Harding with that? Because that's another one that comes up a lot.
There's a guy, an acquaintance of Harding, Colonel Charles R. Forbes.
Of Forbes magazine fame, correct?
That I'm not sure.
It's not.
I was going to say that.
They're not all connected.
What's his name?
It's not all that neat.
Forbes. It's spelt the same way, but I don't think there's a connection there.
But what's his actual – like what's his first name?
Charles R. Forbes.
Charles R. Forbes. Let's see if you're affiliated.
He's not. I know.
I really wanted it to be.
It was revealed later on that Forbes is put in charge of this newly created Veterans Bureau, and it was revealed later that Forbes entered into corrupt arrangements with a number of contractors, particularly with those involved in operations of the hospitals for the veterans, and he sold government property at a fraction of its value.
You don't care about profit when you're not experiencing losses.
So he sold the government property at a fraction of its value. So if you didn't pay anything for it and you're selling it, you know, even at a discount, you're still making some bucks on it if you didn't have to pay for it originally. Charles F. Kramer, an attorney for the Bureau, committed suicide, which brought increased
attention. So that's Kramer committing suicide, correct?
Kramer.
Because suicide starts popping up a lot towards the end of this story.
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of people are either offing themselves or just going away mysteriously.
It's like how the Clintons only surround themselves with depressed people.
Which
brought – Oh, my God. That was grim even for you.
Oh, the text messages we're going to get.
Have you gotten any backlash from anything you said on here yet?
Which brought increased attention to the agency, and then Forbes resigned his position and then did a skedaddle. He fled to Europe. In 1923, Forbes is out. He's gone. He just takes off for Europe, and there is some speculation that old Warren G. told him basically, get out of here before they come arrest you. A Senate investigation a year later in 1924 found that Forbes had looted more than $200 million from the government.
Jeez.
And it was subsequently indicted for bribery and corruption and was brought back for trial in 1925. He was convicted, fined $10,000, and sentenced.
$10,000.
$10,000. $200.
That's the crime I want to commit.
And sentenced two years in Leavenworth. So you got to ask yourself, man, would you do 200 million?
Yeah. And then I got to spend 10 grand?
Yeah.
It's like that game that the dudes always play at 2 o'clock in the morning after a party. It's like would you suck a dick for 200?
I'd run away from one for 2 years. Yeah.
I would do 2 years on that one. So
yeah, and going back to your a lot of people offing themselves too. I mean, it was, you know, this guy Forbes is now accused of selling illegal stuff. Old Attorney General Daugherty discloses to Harding that, hey, Forbes is dirty. He's selling stuff out of the Veterans Bureau. He's selling medical supplies and property and everything else. Harding allowed him to leave the country to escape prosecution. And shortly thereafter, Charles Kramer, general counsel to the Veterans Bureau, commits suicide. And then 10 weeks later, Jesse Smith, Daugherty's private secretary, right? So the private secretary to the attorney general, he also commits suicide. One day after a long conversation with Harding in the White House, and rumors have been circulating that Smith and a group known as the rest of the Ohio gang have been profiting from a variety of corrupt operations. It just wasn't in the VA or in the office of the Secretary of the Interior. I mean, there's dirt all over the place that Mr. Harding is trying to keep under wraps, which is...
In your opinion, is this like one of the biggest like corruption cases of that time, or even times now compared, or like,
well,
like
at, scale at the, wise? At the time it's all was going on, the general public really didn't get full whiff of what was going on. But yeah, I mean, it was from top to bottom for sure.
It was getting all dug up after he died, or
yeah. So okay. he dies, one of like the most popular men in America, and then they find because the shit just hits the fan over and over and over again. Now, that's just the corruption stuff there. That's his cabinet. That's them killing people. Yeah, okay. A lot of weird stuff going on there. Now, we're going to end on some of the juicy stuff here. when he passed away, now his 15-year affair, that one extramarital affair that he admitted to having.
It was 15 years?
It was a 15-year affair with a Miss Carrie Fulton Phillips, which just sounds hot. It came to light with that everything going on there. Now, her correspondence with Warren ended abruptly in 1920. So he's like, for the good of the country and the presidency, I'm going to give up my side piece. The correspondence that he has with her, she kept, and it was sent to the Warren G. Harding Museum in Ohio. So it's love letters back and forth between him and her, plans. And the estate did not want to have it because they're like, we're railroading this guy now. He had a little bit of integrity. Let's not put his dick pics up in the museum.
It's hard out here for a pic.
All this you-up chat.
I don't think you're
going to
find the blue dress in the Clinton Museum.
No, I was going to. Now, so that one was real. This one has never been truly confirmed, but a woman named Nan Britton, who's also from Marion, Ohio.
Wait, so nothing juicy out of her letters to call out?
Or? Well, I wonder. I don't even know what they said.
They just didn't want to hang him up in his museum?
Now, this woman gives you everything you could ever want and more. Nan Britton from Marion, Ohio, claims that Warren fathered her daughter, okay, and that the daughter was conceived during their ongoing affair, which gets mentioned a little bit on Boardwalk Empire Season 3. She writes an account very Stormy Daniels-esque of her romps with the president and how she claims that Secret Service used to be pretty much stationed outside of the closet door to keep people away while Warren G. Harding and her were going at it in the closet.
I'm looking up some of this stuff as we go, and the first article that pops up for this is Warren G., America's horniest president.
This was getting passed around like almost like porn. It's essentially her account of it is it's less Stormy Daniels testimony and more
Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yeah, Penthouse newsletter kind of a thing.
Oh, God.
So now it was really more so good gossip. It was very National Enquirer of her.
All after he's dead.
Yeah, and they thought that this was interesting that it was such a big scandal that Nan Britton would have been with the president because Grover Cleveland, who was already the president, literally fathered a child out of wedlock, and it was national news. So Warren G. just kind of gets railroaded here at this point. Now, Coolidge, who took over as president, refused to dedicate Harding's tomb, okay, which was back in Ohio, because he needed to separate himself in order to regain the confidence of the people. Calvin Coolidge, president only for one term. He won the election, and then he moved on from there. He got everything he wanted done in the 4 years that he was out. Fun trivia note about Calvin Coolidge, didn't really talk much, very quiet guy, invited a bunch of relatively famous people over to the White House for dinner, and one of the women who was, I believe she was an actress of some sort, she sat next to him at dinner, and she said, I have a bet going with my friends, because his nickname was Silent Cal, And she said to him, he goes, I have a bet going with my friends that tonight I can get you to say three words or more during dinner. What do you think about that, Mr. President? And Coolidge responded with, you lose. Went right back to eating dinner, didn't say another fucking word. So now here's where it gets even goofier. There is no autopsy done on Warren G. Harding at the time. Cabinet members are committing suicide left and right. He's making big money moves to sell his newspaper, secure his family's future. No one really knows what the exact deal was on that. There's the idea that maybe Daugherty could have been involved in some way, shape, or form. Was there outside sources going on for – was it really a heart attack, or was there some sort of, you know, other foul stuff going play on there? Well, Mr. Daugherty was never charged with any of the corruption – I'm sorry, he was never convicted of any of the charges he was brought that were brought against him for his involvement with the said corruption. So Daugherty gets away clean. Warren G's dead. His secretary that knew everything commits suicide. You know, people are leaving the country. Albert Fall, like we said, goes on to be the first former cabinet member to serve prison time. And that's just – I mean, this is – we talked about the modern world to wrap up here. The modern world happens almost overnight with World War One. Before this, politics was like, oh, those are good guys. You know what I mean? Oh, they're just doing their thing. You know what I mean? They're campaigning. They're just like us. They want to represent us. Now you've got the modern world. Boom. Happens overnight, like we said. And now Warren G. Harding, all this accusations of corruption, now the newspaper is running wild with it because now everybody knows everything here. So Warren G. Harding dies a hero, a beloved member of the country, wannabe, you know, in his mind probably thought, maybe they'll put me on money one day. And now we remember him as possibly the worst president to ever hold the office. Do you guys have anything else you want to say on the way out? Or?
Where do you think he ranks now?
He is ranked towards the bottom. That's what most historians would agree on with him.
I'm talking our ranking system.
Our rankings.
Our ranks. That one gets weird there because he definitely, if he had gotten the second term, all these allegations and corruption would have came out during that. We could have seen another Nixon. He could have been Nixon before Nixon, which would have been interesting. Because Teapot Dome, all this other shit, it came to light. He only got away with not having it, charges brought against him because the motherfucker was dead. So.
Right.
But
why go after the guy that's already dead? He paid the supreme sacrifice. His death, it was, like you said, Kev, there was never an autopsy. But you got to believe that with all of this shit that's swirling around him, you know, he's trying to be the puppet master and that quote from earlier about, you know, I don't have a problem with my enemies. It's my friends that I have a problem with.
Yeah,
that,
he knew.
He had to have known and just trying to deal with all of that and then dealing with the misses and all these plans. If that whole world tour thing was valid, you know, that like, holy crap, if we can survive this, yeah, we'll go on a world tour. That's got to put a real hurting on a guy that wasn't a well guy to begin with. I mean, if you're going to the sanitarium to get a little R&R when you're 23 years old, and now he died. He was what, 57 when he died. You got to believe that was just a whole stress induced kind of a thing. That, oh my God,
I can't imagine it. And it's a. He's a fascinating character. I enjoyed reading up on this one. Like we said, he does get mentioned in season 3 of Boardwalk Empire. There is a bunch of stuff that falls out. Ohio's still pretty proud of this guy because Ohio's also proud of LeBron James, who's left them twice. So, Ohio, not really much to root for there on a professional level.
But, he's a criminal, but he's our criminal.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't get me wrong. We're the same way over here in Jersey. But real quick, just wrapping up here, I want to say thank you to my good buddy Anthony Cianci for coming on the show. Bud, thank you for doing this. Thanks for listening. I want to bring you and your father on for another episode down the road here.
Yeah,
when LP goes on his sabbatical.
Yeah, Florida time.
So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This has been awesome.
Not easy day, brother.
Awesome.
I want to say thank you to Ming and Zapsik for letting us use the Shared Universe studio. Absolutely love it here, man. Thank you to the Kahuna behind the ones and twos, buddy. You took good care of us today, as always. And real quick, Dad, I want to say thank you for getting me into history. I love you, dude. This is a good one here. If you want to support the show, people really like it. We're enjoying it. We're not sure. We don't want to monetize preemptively and start charging $1 for a show. We don't want to do a Patreon just yet. We're trying to figure this thing out. The best thing you guys can do to help us right now is if you leave us a review on iTunes, if you subscribe to the iTunes or the SoundCloud account, leaving us reviews really helps us out. It pushes us up in the rankings. Share the podcast. If you know anybody who's into podcasts, just let them know about the show. I think we're charming, all right? I think we're fucking charming.
It's a shame they can't see how good looking we are.
Exactly. And subscribe. Every Tuesday we're putting out new episodes for Tuesday Lose Day. So this one's going to be coming out that coming Tuesday. So the shows that I have right now are already going to be done by that point. But if you check me out on social media at KP Burke Sucks at Twitter and Instagram, way more fun on Instagram, KP Burke on Facebook. And kpburkcomic.com is officially launched. My website is there. The links to American Loser are also available on that the website. Again, please help us out here, guys. We're having a blast doing this. We want to continue to grow the show. And I want to say thank you really quick to our international listeners. We have listeners in Germany, the UK, Australia, Spain, and as of today, Dora Noragato to our listeners in Japan. So,
you're saying international people are listening to an American Loser podcast?
Yeah, they're probably hoping it's
What is this shit? I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, they don't know the flag-waving kind
they're
of
like, thing. Oh, they're like, oh, we like Big Kahuna's voice. We'll listen.
Yeah, there you go.
It's, but that being said, guys, I think we're going to wrap this one up, man. Thank you again. My name is KP Burke, and this was Warren G. Harding, American Loser.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.